Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Are we live now? I think we're live. Hey, everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and yours. It's Christmas morning. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And I'm
joined Merry
by that guy.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays. I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, for the first time on StreamYard, all set up by David Woods, we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. I am in Alexandria, Virginia.
Beautiful Alexandria, Virginia. Is there a library there?
I believe so. Not that I've been to yet.
Is it a big library? Has it been in existence for approximately 2,000 years?
I went to one of the oldest Catholic churches in the state of Virginia. But yes, I think that...
What did we sing? What did we sing at the oldest Catholic church in Virginia?
Was it one of your favorites that you... it was very... It was like an old school. Like,
was it O Holy Night? Was it O Little Child of Bethlehem? What were we doing?
I don't even remember, but I think it was O Holy Night. I think they did O Holy Night.
O Holy Night's a banger. It's a banger.
You retweeted
it'll turn you Catholic in like 30 seconds.
My mom went yesterday because it was Sunday. I didn't go Sunday, but I went on Christmas. I go like twice a year usually. I'm a former altar boy, and this was like old school church. So like the cassocks, like whatever, the black and the white, and it was, you know, all everyone's man. It wasn't mixed like it is like in most modern churches now. Definitely had an old school feel to it. This
morning. They're rejecting Vatican II. They're going they're some Opus Dei freaks. Yeah, that's great. That's exactly what you want on Christmas morning, Christmas Eve night. You want some back to the roots. Back to doing indulgences. You want the hardcore stuff.
A lot of guilt, stuff like that. Many, many sins.
Yes.
But yeah, there was a little bit of that. But I had that, opened some presents with my family. And now we're doing a freaking podcast on Christmas Day.
Stupid.
But here we are. We had one Pac-12 game we have to recap, and we're going to preview the rest of the bowl games. And I don't know if we're going to even get to questions and stuff, but I guess we might. If you have questions, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. We are live on our YouTube channel, so put us some comments and questions in there. David's controlling all of this, by the way, which I thought that the podcast would cease to exist after David tried to do something. So I learned that he's lazy and not incapable.
I just added something to it. Look at it. See? You see the comment that's on the screen?
I did that.
Yeah. That's right.
Thanks, Cam. You're actually doing things. Like,
I know.
Because I'm the one that does all the things. And
I'll show you why right now. I'm going to show you right with a comment. That's why. I'm doing this.
So David's controlling things. Yeah, we'll try to get to some questions and stuff, I guess, at the end. I'll have to look at the emails. The website is pac12podcast.com. And if you want to follow us over on the Apple Podcasting app and rate us with a 5-star and leave us a funny review, we'd appreciate that very much. Do we have any new reviews, David?
No. It's been bah humbug. We've been Scrooged on the Apple Podcasts. I guess people don't like us and don't appreciate us. And the end result is we will be ending the show. This is the last one. So thank you all for your time. And, you know, we'll you know, maybe be back in some other iteration at some point, you know, maybe in 5-7 years, something like that.
In the Christmas spirit, I did want to, I had a personal review that I got. I believe it was Christmas Eve. Would you mind if I shared that with our listeners, David?
Oh, I would love for you to read this review. It's very good.
It's from Brendan Watson, BWatsSD92, over on Twitter or X. Just out of the blue on Christmas Eve, he writes, "You might know less about football than USC football. It's too bad you're the guy in charge because the guys you employ are so much better. Anyways, have fun begging people to subscribe to your hot garbage." So I thought that was nice. I responded, "Merry Christmas to you as well," with a couple of Christmas emojis, which I thought was very nice. And then he replied, "I got this from one of your staffers, LOL. Just wanted to expose how easy it is to get under your skin. I guess all the people were right." So I guess me wishing you Merry Christmas was getting under your skin. And then he said, "Don't worry, though. I'm building a pretty good following myself. I'll return the favor eventually. Merry Christmas."
Wow, you've created an arch enemy, and you don't even know who he is. That's fantastic.
He has zero followers.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Amy and West Texas Mike bring up a good point, which I'm going to lay out there. I thought you had reviews that you were going to wait until today to read. We did. So I will read those because I forgot that. all right, so we had two new reviews. One was from Punt Pass Pundit, 5-star review, "Huddle laughs and pigskin insights, a touchdown in podcasting. Whether you're a diehard Pac-12 fan or just someone who likes to hear the word football, occasionally the Podcast of Champions is your go-to audio haven. Ryan and David don't just break down games, they smash them in entertaining bits of wisdom wrapped in layers of witty banter. It's like getting a graduate degree in Pac-12 football, but with more laughs and less student debt. Their coverage is so engaging that even my goldfish started showing interest in football. If they ever decide to cover the Big Ten, I'm pretty sure they'd give those Midwestern folks a run for their money in the humor department. Written by ChatGPT as requested. But actually, the blend of humor, insightful analysis, and engaging content makes the podcast stand out in the realm of college football podcasts." And then there's one more.
Okay.
This is from Bad Beat in Life, a 5-star review. "Great stuff about the podcast. Sometimes it's about sports. Sometimes it's about the Pac-12. Never about any championship teams. Most of the times, Dave spews facts that no one cares about or fact checks. Always begging for 5-star reviews. Always entertaining. Thank you for doing this podcast. Listener since the first episode." Beautiful. Love it. Thank you.
Very cool.
I guess I'll hide that comment now. It's tough. It's tough doing this part. I can't believe I do it every week. The DJing of all this.
But when
stuff.
You have to like talk and host, yeah. And then I'm actually putting up graphics and things while this is going on. Yeah, this is great that David gets to do this, edit the show, all those things. Love it. It's kind of nice just to be here. I'm like passenger princess. I just get to show up like David and just kind of talk and like talk trash and everything. It's great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, don't you feel good? Don't you feel good?
Alex, this isn't my basement. This is my sister's basement. I do not have a basement because I live in California, but there's not many basements in California, I don't think.
No, basements are not a feature out here because we don't have to deal with the hellish weather patterns of the rest of the country.
Yeah, it was in the like 30s at some point at night, but it was like 40s or whatever. I'm supposed to play pickleball a little bit later. We'll see if that happens. We went on some hikes with the dogs. That was kind of fun. But yeah, just enjoying, you know, the Christmas spirit. I'm flying back tomorrow and then I got to drive to San Diego to cover USC in the Holiday Bowl, which we'll preview in a little bit.
Tremendous.
It was great. We do have to recap the game. There's a few little news and notes that are going on in college football. David, did you see the NCAA now saying free transfers for everybody? So if you've already transferred once, a lot of coaches felt some stability in recruiting from the transfer portal. Chip Kelly might have been one of those coaches that if you get a guy that's transferred, now he can't transfer again without a waiver. Well, that's out. So if you just transfer in, you can now transfer again, at least for the next.
If you get in now, they didn't open it up for everybody. It's because the injunction, they're saying if you get into the portal right now, you're not going to be penalized and you can play next year. But if you come in the spring, they don't know if this rule will still be in effect then. So it's basically like it's actually a little bit more dire because it's a poop or get off the pot for a lot of these guys. And so I think you might see some entries starting probably tomorrow that are like, what the hell is happening? Because it's guys who are just thinking about it, but they're like, I don't know if I'll be eligible if I do it in the spring. So I got to do it now.
They might force their hand. Yeah.
So it could be really, really interesting. I could think of a few guys for UCLA who might consider it. I'm sure you can think of some for USC who might consider it. So it's going to be wild. And a period of time that I think is already like among the most unstable in college football just got significantly more so, which should make it very interesting for the next week, but I think infuriating for fans of particular teams.
Yeah, and I think there's probably multiple, but there's the transfer that's like the fifth year guy that's going to play one more year somewhere. Like Russell Wilson sort of started that, it kind of started that trend before really there was a transfer portal thing. Then you have like the young guy that maybe has some experience or maybe is just more about he was a 4 or 5 star player. Like USC got Bear Alexander from Georgia, and I was very productive. Didn't have like a lot of numbers, but he was a big part of that defense. But as like a, second year player, you expect him to stick around. Well, someone like that could go now, right? And so that young player that you felt like was a, kind of like a later recruit more than a stopgap guy that's just going to fill a hole for a year, those guys can leave. And that's a little crazy.
Yeah. No, it's stupid. It's really, really stupid. And, I think I said on the show maybe a couple years ago, I think players should be able to transfer anytime. They should be able to transfer in season. And, it's sort of like the monkey claw curls, like the monkey paw, where it's like, oh, I said that. I don't want this. This is not pleasant. Want this. Please take it back. Why can't the things I want to be true actually come true when I say them? And instead it's just like the absolute worst things. Like, it is going to be terrible Chip Kelly who comes in. That is what it's going to be.
Or Jaden Daniels will never start again or whatever it is. It's so good. Then also we have like a settlement. I haven't read too much on this, but I don't know. Hopefully you did.
Don't care.
State, Washington State. I think ends up being like $6 million a school or something.
Yeah, they get to control it, and I think the rest of the Pac-12 released in for like that. They would. They were basically setting it up as money to help in a potential liabilities. Like if they have potential liabilities to offset, that was their contribution to it or something.
Yeah. So at least that's sort of like no more, we don't like talk about lawsuits and stuff. At least that's
we don't play those games.
Going by the way, so I needed to like share this too, because I didn't remember going to the Rose Bowl the year before and all that stuff. There was a lot of people talking about like the whole kid toucher thing. My friend Tyler, like we'll text each other. And my sister, who I'm at her house now, was kind of involved in that. She's actually a little bit older than Tyler, but like he would like flirt with her or something. And then I would, that's my little sister, you're a kid toucher. So I think it was something like that. But when we went to Japan, we went on a trip to Japan, Tyler and me and some other people. One of the features in the subway was signs of like a Japanese schoolgirl with like a circle and a line through it with basically like,
no kid touching.
Do not touch children. And right. We were on this trip together, and that's kind of what the origin of that was. Not anything specific, but I texted him like, do you remember that?
I'm not sure that helps anything. I think it just makes it exactly what you thought it was.
the it was crazy though, because we were a group of us, we were all tall, and all of the handles for the subway are like down here. Like you can't, you're not reaching up for it.
They're so you're actually like, not getting any help from it.
No, you're like, just like holding it like this.
Yeah, because it's not actually, you know, in a position where it'll help you from a leverage standpoint.
But it was amazing. You know, you'd pay like $20 for a Corona and stuff. But I had a blast into it. But it was a long time ago. I want to go back for sure.
Yeah, Alex. So it's a ring of kid touchers. And then West Texas.
My I think it's just like a common thing. Like, hey, don't, you know, inappropriately.
I mean, it's good advice. It's sort of like don't masturbate on a phone call with somebody affiliated with your university and
that you're paying. That's an advocate for. Yeah,
actually, like a good rule of thumb: don't masturbate on a phone call. Like, honestly, like, do you really need that? Like, there's other things.
I mean, if it's like your significant other's on the other side of the country.
Yeah, but I'm like kind of like NSA could be listening. You don't need to be masturbating on a phone call. Like, you really don't. You really don't. I mean, you can masturbate in your own time, right? Like, do you really need participation in your masturbatory session? Like, if were you not, like, significant were other you not 14 once? Like, just figure it out, dude.
I'm just saying, couples are in long-distance relationships, you know, sometimes.
Okay, but it's like, whatever. Just, okay, you masturbate over there, I'll masturbate over here, but we don't need to be communicating while it's happening.
Okay.
Like, that doesn't need to happen.
Alexa's probably listening to everything anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Do you want her, you know, taking it all in, so to speak?
Do you use Alexa much, or do you do that at all, or no?
Are
you
like Alexa? No.
God, do you have Siri? Do you like use?
No, I don't use any of that voice to like command.
You don't? I figure you would. Yeah.
No, well, I've got my thumbs. My thumbs work just fine.
My sister's that like, she sets like, I mean, she uses Alexa all the time. She's like, add this to the grocery list. Set a timer for this. Set a timer for that. She has like multiple timers going on. I'm like, I guess I could use it like that. I do turn off some lights and stuff with Alexa. But don't use it at all. I don't know. It's kind of cool.
But it's you agree it's unnecessary. Like, it's
definitely unnecessary. A lot of stuff we do is unnecessary.
But it's not even just that it's unnecessary. It's like extraneous. Like, it's adding a step to a task that's very simple. I can use one finger to turn on or off a light. I know it's crazy, but I can do that.
I know you're technically capable. I didn't think that was possible before.
Yeah. And look, what about the clapper? Like, why do I have to talk words? Why can't I just do this again? What happened to that?
I never had one of those.
Neither did I.
But that'd be kind of, I guess it'd be all right.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was like a good Christmas gift. Like, they would, well, it was a popular Christmas gift.
It was like a white elephant, right? The clapper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know. Was the clapper expensive?
No idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I like being off the rails on Christmas because.
What was the thing you would put on your steering wheel?
The club.
The club and the clapper feel like they were around the same time.
I still have an old classic car thing, and I keep the club in the backseat, but I never use it. One of my best Halloween costumes ever, I was the club. So this was probably, it had to be like 20 years ago or something. It was like black and red, like maybe poster board or something that I made in the circles. So like it was kind of like a Michelin Man sort of thing. I was like, but I was like the club, had the club written on my chest. It was actually pretty good. Like, I'm not a costume maker person, but I thought I did a good job of that one.
I like that.
Amy says clap on, clap off the clapper. Yeah.
Yep.
Or the chia pet, chia. Do they still do those? I don't know.
Brennan says I wipe back to front. I don't even know the physics of doing that. That would be very difficult. Wouldn't it?
Brennan, that's almost like my review.
That's like pushing.
Yeah. Right?
Or like scooping. But either way, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know how we got here.
I don't know how we got here either.
All right. Well, I guess we got to recap. We had one game.
Mm.
Did
we?
There was a game.
Because I've wiped it from my memory already.
I've nailed this one. Yeah.
Can you really say you nailed anything with this game?
I figured this was how it was going to go.
You figured it would be the worst game any of us have ever seen?
No, I didn't figure that.
Yeah.
But I figured it would be, I didn't, Yeah, I thought the Utah attrition thing would sort of catch up. And the fact that Northwestern didn't really have much, you know, they did lose. I think they lost a couple offensive linemen in this game, but they had lost one offensive lineman coming into it. But it was ugly. It was brutal. It wasn't fun. It was a Las Vegas Bowl between. Do you want to do the sound effects?
Oh, right. The Utah Utes and the Northwestern Wildcats. So this was a horrible football game. Utah lost 14-7, which is, I mean, it's a very Utah score. And I think if Utah were going into the Big Ten next year, they would be like completely comfortable being a Big Ten West team. Because this was somehow the most Big Ten West game of the season here at the final stages of the season. How many yards passing did Utah have in this game?
Okay, at one point, the pig farmer, I think he was like 4 of 8 for 15 yards.
Yeah.
And then his backup comes in, and I forget his name.
Luke Batari,
and throws a like little screen pass that goes for 20 yards. So it was like in the late third quarter, I believe. And for, you know, 38 minutes of game time, the pig farmer couldn't get 20 yards passing, and Batari comes in and one play got it. So I just thought that was kind of a funny little anecdote.
73 total yards.
Total for everybody.
Yeah, pig farmer.
Including Batari, who came in and did it in one play.
One of pig farmer's picks was maybe the worst interception I saw all year. It was like a post where he throws it so far and away from his intended receiver, the safety has to break off the receiver's route to go get the ball because it was thrown so poorly and so far and so away from his intended target. I've watched a lot of pig farmer play football. This was one of his very worst games. I was really shocked to see it because like even just like pretty simple stuff they were giving him was just wildly inaccurate in a way that he's not an FBS level starter. Let's just be real. But he's been able to complete throws. He was so inaccurate in this game. It was crazy to watch. I have to like wonder, and they were saying this on the broadcast, is it hard to prepare for a game to be the starter when you know you're out? Like when you know you're transferring out? Does that hurt focus? Does it do anything? And he played a really, really poor game.
It probably hurt him, right? Because he's trying to go somewhere.
He's trying to go somewhere else, and he's probably got his mind on something else. So it was just he performed really poorly. What I would say is this game was actually a lot closer than it should have been. Northwestern was a much they were just much better this entire game.
They missed a couple field goals, right? Yeah. And they had like a fumble, and there was
their quarterback. I thought, you know, it's a Big Ten West quarterback, so they're gonna gas him up for like throwing 200 yards. But he got hurt for a little bit, which stalled one Northwestern drive. Then he came back in and immediately.
He looked like he was not going to be coming back. They were showing his family.
His mother was trying to get on the field because she thought he died or whatever. And then he like comes waltzing out of the injury tent looking fine. But he was pretty good. I mean, he was competent in a way that few Big Ten West quarterbacks are. I thought their defense was really good. There were some stretches where Utah was able to get some stuff in the run game. But the announcers kept saying, and I thought it was true, Northwestern was perfectly content to allow Utah to do whatever it wanted in the middle of the field. And then as soon as Utah would get to the 40, things suddenly got just a ton harder. I was really impressed with Northwestern. I was really impressed with their defense. I thought that their head coach, you talked about this because you actually did fucking research.
I did.
He's
Big Ten Coach of the Year,
Yeah, their head coach is pretty good. It seemed like he had the game plan for this game. And I don't think it was coached poorly by Utah. I think it was just a matter of they were down so many guys and went down guys in the game. JaQuindon Jackson went down.
Yeah.
And then, like, speaking of guys who are not FBS level starters, like Jalen Glover, I love him, but he's not the guy who can be your bell cow. They had Bernard back for this game. You know, he looked like if he'd had maybe a game or two more coming into this one where he'd been healthy, maybe he would have been able to, like, you know, tote the rock a little bit more, and maybe this game changes a little bit. But Utah, I mean, for Utah fans, it's basically, you know, this is kind of a lost season just because of so many injuries, so many, like, weird things, like Cam Rising and Brant Keithy never coming back when people were expecting them to be back, you know, three or four games into the season.
I don't know why you would expect them to be back. I mean, it's not like they were representing the school at Pac-12 Media Day in July. Oh, wait. That's why we expected them back.
But, like, given all of that, finishing 8-5 is actually pretty impressive, actually. And I thought in this game, given that they were down two safeties, they were down, you know, a bunch of other defenders besides. Jonah Ellis was not playing in this game. Given all of that, I mean, I know Northwestern's no great shakes, but they were going toe-to-toe with this team, basically all defense for the entirety of the game. Like, they had fourth down stops, they had a goal line stop. I mean, there was still a lot of impressive stuff from what Utah did in this game. It just, it wasn't enough because, I mean, I hate to pin it on one guy who's also leaving the conference, but Bryson Barnes just played a really poor game. I mean, I don't think they were going to score like 30, but he hits a couple more throws that he usually hits. This is a different game.
I agree with you. And shout out to Amy. Yes. So I did some research on the Northwestern side, and we knew that there was attrition for Utah. I did reach out to Amy to see, like, and there's a lot of dudes out, like Siomi Vaca. There was a bunch of guys that were, like, out, then they hit the portal out. There was just, there's a lot of dudes that just weren't going to be there for Utah. So that's kind of why I took Northwestern plus 6.5 and got that one right. Dave, Do you know how many bowl games you've predicted or picked correctly against the spread this season?
It's got to be several. I would say between 5 and 10.
You have none. You're over.
Oh, shoot.
Over three. That's okay. I'm only one game behind you now.
I got to go look at it because I think I've picked against the spread correctly on Pac-12 games like twice in the last like 15 games or something.
It's kind of
it's
bad.
Been an incredible stretch for me,
like, because you were very much
yeah,
we're at the point I was like pretty much just giving up, just I'm gonna make my picks. And yeah, so we have a few games left, so it is a little, there's a little drama there, which we didn't have before. I was gonna do the money line on this one and I should like, that was probably get a little extra juice with the money line 6.5 point favorite. But it's, you look at Utah, what they did this year. Do you remember, you know, the UCLA game? They score 7 offensive points, you know. Oregon State, 7 points in that one. And they play, like, you know, Oregon, they only score 6 at home. They play Arizona State, score 55. You're like, okay, what the hell's going on here? And then this one, only 7. It's, you know, they go out and beat USC. They score 34 against USC. Then lay an egg. 6 against Oregon next week. It's such a weird year, but I agree. It's like, it's kind of one of those things where injuries are part of college football and you just have to sort of overcome them. But at some point, it's just like, okay, what are we going to do now? Like, there's only so many guys that you can, like, throw out there. You've already had guys, you know, defensive guys starring on offense and doing well. You'd rather, like, leave on a high note, but getting 2 Pac-12 championships before the conference, you know, collapsed, you know, that's great. I think that's something that you can go into the Big 12 play next year and be one of the favorites in the conference. So, yeah, it's tough.
It is tough.
That was a tough game. That was one team was, like, riding high. They'd won their last 3 games, coach of the year. And everyone knows how great Whittingham is, but there was just no way, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was weird that Pig Farmer came back. Like, you're in the portal. I think Amy or somebody pointed out in the chat, or, you know, are you motivated at that point? I know you want to, you're auditioning, like, for your next gig, but it's sort of just one of those things where you should probably just move on. Like,
yeah.
You know,
what a bad audition now, you know?
Like, yeah. It didn't help his cause. It didn't help Utah. It didn't really help anybody, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you got your shirt still.
That's true. That is my Pig Farmer.
Yeah.
He always will be.
Nice. Okay. So we got to preview some games.
We do. We have to preview some football contest.
We got three left, right? Is that?
Well, we have three left this week. So there's also the Oregon and Washington games. You're familiar with those teams, the two best teams in the league.
Okay.
But those happen January 1st or later. So let's do this right now. Are we going to record again over the weekend, or are we going to preview all of these?
Okay, so the last game is
Friday.
So we could do on like Saturday. Why don't we do one? We'll recap Saturday.
Yeah, because I think devoting a whole show to the playoff and stuff would be cool.
I think that'd be Oregon good. Yeah,
versus Liberty.
No, I like that. Okay.
Okay. So we're going to preview three games today.
Yes. So first up, we have the Holiday Bowl between the Louisville Cardinals.
Are these so Cardinals? Is this going to be like
chirp, chirp.
The birds, or is this going to be like the you know, the second ranked in the Laocy?
What
the underneath the Pope? You know,
are they? Oh, Cardinals okay, play? Yes.
All right, so number 15, Louisville. Oh, guess we got to decide on a new Pope now.
Nice. And unranked USC Trojans. Should I just say? Do you want to do the sound? Should I just say the name and you do the sound effect? Or we do it that way?
I think that's right.
Okay.
All right. This is Wednesday, December 27th on Big Fox. It's a 5 p.m.er. Number 15, Louisville, taking on the USC Trojans. USC is a 7-point dog. The USC Trojan football team, the premier West Coast power in college football, one of the top five programs all time, a 7-point dog in a postseason contest to Louisville, manned by Jack Plummer. What kind of world are we living in, Ryan? What kind of world?
This
it's
is
a
crazy.
Fallen world. It's a crazy fallen world. It's crazy a weary world.
Yes.
The weary world will rejoice.
It is kind of bizarre. I think it was higher than this before. It might have been like 7.5, and it came down. We might have lost the hook. Yeah, this is a weird one. I'll be down there. USC hasn't won a bowl game since they beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl. They kind of rise to the occasion in some of the bigger bowls. This was they haven't done that in other.
Is this a bigger bowl?
Certainly not. they've not Utah levels, like they don't have the injuries that Utah has, but I think last I checked was 16 players that entered the
pool. Certainly Caleb Williams is playing in this game, right? One last go around.
He will not be.
Oh.
QB1 is Miller Moss.
But certainly he's played a lot of college football at this point, right?
No. He's done fine when he's been in there.
But he's expected to start next year for USC, right? So this will be a nice little audition for him.
He could. That is an actual option. But because they don't have a transfer portal quarterback yet, because they lost their 5-star quarterback, Malachi Nelson, who's in the portal. A guy named Jake Jensen, who was a former walk-on, is QB2 right now. So
what about two first names from Kansas State?
Will Howard is... Well, unless that happened today or something, he is not committed.
Howard Williams?
Yeah, they expect him, but Ohio State's in on him too. He can end up at
Ohio State. Wow, so this might actually be the Miller Moss, the great beginning of the Miller Moss era.
It could be. We talked to Lincoln Riley on signing day, and he's open to getting two quarterbacks where you get one like veteran guy, like a Will Howard potentially, and then a younger guy that could be like for, you know, helping out for the future. But yeah, it's Miller Moss's show. There are some guys that are not in the portal, but they are foregoing their rest of their eligibility. You mentioned Caleb Williams, but Marshawn Lloyd, the great running back, he's not going to play in this. Brendan Rice, the wide receiver, he's going to go for it. They do it now. Taj Washington is going to go pro, but he will play in the game. And I think part of the reason is he's like 30 yards short of a 1,000-yard season. But he's kind of a – I think he would probably play anyway. That's just kind
and
of –
And Mario Williams is gone, right?
Mario Williams is in the transfer portal, yes. So, yeah, so there'll be some young guys out there playing. New coaches will not be part of the game plan. I asked Lincoln Riley about that.
Why? Why wouldn't you have Danton Lynn calling your defense for this stupid game?
I really have no idea. He talked about it. I get there's reasons, but like for stupid. Me, like your defense was so bad, just might as well let the new guy come in. And do his thing. Yeah. So stupid. Brian Odom, who's one of the linebacker coaches, I've liked who they hired. Doug Belk has been highly regarded. He was a defensive coordinator at Houston. Matt Entz was the head coach at North Dakota State and won two national championships there. He's going to be the linebacker coach now. So I think they brought in some good pieces. They still might hire someone else, but as of now, those three guys won't be involved. Brian Odom was like co-defensive coordinator because they fired Grinch. He's probably going to be gone, but he's still around right now. So I think he's going to call the defense for USC and then move on.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
But I'm taking Louisville.
Yeah, no, yeah. Good God. And I've seen Jack Plummer throw a football this year, and it's not good. But good God, you give me all that. Yeah, you're going to have a lame duck coach calling your defense. You're going to be missing a ton of dudes. Miller Moss is going to start at quarterback. You give me Louisville minus 14.
Yeah, I'm taking minus 7 here for sure. I think this is one of those cases where I haven't even looked at too much of what Louisville has lost. But for USC side, I don't know. I mean, guys seem like you talk to guys, ask them. I ask guys about motivation. They seem to be like they're motivated, but the proof's in the pudding here. Like they've lost to some bad teams. Last time they played Jake Plummer, it did not go well. I mean,
Jake Plummer is probably also bad, but Jack Plummer.
Yeah. It was so weird watching Jake Browning play NFL football.
He threw three interceptions, so at least we got a return to form.
Some of the stuff, like when you see him throw into the sideline, you're just like, oh, I could like run faster than that pass. I was like, oh, we talked about him so much. But anyway, yeah, so we'll both take Louisville in this one.
Yeah. All right. Moving
next
on.
Up, we got to talk about the Alamo Bowl. This is the next day, December 28th on ESPN. We have the number 14 ranked Arizona Wildcats. And the number 12 ranked Oklahoma Sooners.
Well, I guess we're here now. Let's steal some land.
What a good game, though.
Yeah, what a good game.
I mean, these teams are like borderline. Next year could be like almost at a playoff kind of thing. Like,
can I tell people the time of the game? Or are you just gonna?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
No, it's fine. No. You go. You wanted to talk. You talk.
This game's at
6:15 p.m. is what it is. 6:15 p.m. on ESPN
Pacific
time.
Pacific time is far superior to, like, it's, so 12:35 here, it's 9:35 in the morning there.
Hawaii time is goated, actually. Hawaii time is goated.
Hawaii time is pretty badass. But it's just
Hawaii time right now is so cool because it's 7 a.m., football starts, and it's over by, like, 8. It's great.
Yeah. No, I do like it. But, like, the game's coming on here, I don't know.
9:15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is going to be a really good game, probably the best of the non-playoff bowls for the Pac-12. Maybe one of the best bowl games aside from the playoff bowls. So Arizona is really good. What's their opt-out situation, Ryan? I'm sure you've done research on this.
I have not. I have not. This is Christmas time, man. I haven't. I think Arizona's okay. I think they're a decent spot. I really don't know. Like, I should have done this because I'm like so close to you, but I haven't done. I did the research last week because I needed to get that one game to get.
Well, let's look at who they've lost to the transfer portal and see if there's anybody in there that we care about. So Daniel Hamuli, who played linebacker, Cruz rushing, Oren Patu. Yeah, honestly, they're pretty good from a transfer portal standpoint. Like, they haven't lost much of anything. And Oklahoma kind of sucks. Jed Fish, chance to win 10 games in his third year here. It will be, like, I think maybe a pseudo home game for Oklahoma. Probably a lot more Oklahoma fan going to the Alamo than Arizona fan, wouldn't you think? But it's the best bowl game Arizona's been in 20 years, 25 years, something like that. Right?
I think so. I mean, since Desert Swarm games?
Let's look. Arizona football seasons. The best bowl games they've been to. So they did the Alamo Bowl, Foster Farms, New Mexico Bowl, Fiesta Bowl. Oh, the Fiesta Bowl. I forgot about the Fiesta Bowl in 2014. Okay. And that was like, you know, that's like basically a home game. And they lost. But that was with Rich Rod. So this is probably the best since Fiesta Bowl. And they did the Alamo Bowl as well in 2010 somehow when they were 7-6. Was the Alamo Bowl a dirt bowl at that point? Weird.
I think it was all right.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a big bowl game. They haven't been to a bowl game of any kind since 2017. So that's another big thing. I think fan support should be pretty good. But again, I think it'll be a little bit closer to an Oklahoma home game. All that being said, I'm having a hard time betting against Noah Fifita, Jed Fish, that whole crew on offense. And their defense has been good enough. You know, Johnny Nansen. Once again, we are sorry that we denigrated your hiring as a defensive coordinator because we both thought you sucked.
Yep.
You don't suck. Good. You've been pretty good. So give me Arizona. I think they win the Alamo Bowl. I think they cover the did we even mention the spread? We didn't.
2.5-point spread.
We're all screwed up. We're all screwed up because we're like trying to do the sound effects at one time, and it's tough. It's a tough world.
David actually doing work during the show is different for him. He's not sure how this works, so it's...
No, it's not good. We don't like it. I like to babble. So 2.5 points. I think Arizona covers it, wins by 7.
I like this one. And then, you know, Oklahoma, I don't know much about the opt-outs, but the big one is the quarterback, right?
Who's currently on another roster.
Yeah, he's now in Eugene.
Yes.
So... That's tough. I think you're losing your starting quarterback. The fact that you do have the continuity, at least, you know, at the higher level with Arizona and quarterback and those wide receivers, I do like the way they've been playing later in the season. And, you know, Oklahoma beat a playoff team. They beat Texas this year, but no Dillon Gabriel. I'm going to go with Arizona on this one too. It's getting a couple points is fine. If it was three or more, I think anything under a field goal, I would still take Arizona. If you're giving me a full score, like a field goal or 4 points or something, I think I would probably just take Oklahoma. But just under that, I feel like this is edging me towards Arizona. I mean, they could win.
Ryan is edging.
I mean, bowl games are weird. Anything can happen. But I feel like this is going to be one where, all right, Arizona, I like the way they've been playing. See if they can continue that. And we'll both take the Wildcats.
Perfect. Beautiful. Love it.
One last one.
That'll be a 10-3 Arizona Wildcats football season.
Insane. Yeah. Triple overtime, like 2-point conversion away against USC from potentially doing a lot more.
Yeah.
We got the Sun Bowl. This is Friday, December 29th. So 3 days in a row, we got Pac-12 bowl games. CBS, it's 11 a.m. on the West Coast. And we have number 19, Oregon State Beavers. And the number 16, Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Where's my pot of gold? Notre Dame's a 6.5-point favorite in this game on CBS on Friday.
Yeah.
Love the Sun Bowl. It's always on 11 a.m. It's a good time on a Friday. Oregon State, man. Who's playing quarterback for Oregon State in this football game?
Is it Ben Gulbranson or
it's got to be, right? Is he even on the roster anymore? I thought he was transferring out too.
I thought he was like on the staff now or something. I don't know. He's like a graduate assistant.
Yeah. So Oregon State, they don't have their coach. Their coach from this season, obviously, Jonathan Smith bounced. Their defensive coordinator is now their head coach. They've lost. Starting linebacker, Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. They've lost their two top quarterbacks, the guys who've taken snaps this year, DJ Yu and Aiden Childs. And again, most of that coaching staff. They're going to have to play a lot of defense in this one. I mean, I think Notre Dame, no great shakes. They're not awesome. But I think their level of continuity is significantly better than Oregon State's right now. Let's see. What does Notre Dame lose? Let's take a look at this. Transfer portal. They're losing.
They lost a receiver to Cal.
They've lost an offensive tackle. They've lost a couple of receivers. They lost Rico Flores and Tobias Merriweather. They lost another receiver, Braylon James. They're down a lot, actually. Like a ton. A ton of their receiving crew is gone. What appears to be some offensive linemen. So their offense, which is already kind of dirt, might be even worse. And did what's his face? Did Sam Hartman opt out? I think he did.
I think they got Riley Leonard coming in for next year.
I think he opted out.
He
opted out of the Sun Bowl. It's too many points then. I'm taking Oregon State.
Wow.
Because okay. I think it's two teams that are like, who's going to play? How are they going to play? No idea. Down quarterbacks, both teams. Ben Gulbranson has started games. I mean, are we assuming he's starting? Let's look. Ben Gulbranson.
I thought I actually read something. He was supposed to be on staff or something. Did I screw that up?
Yeah, he's starting in the Sun Bowl. And he's got experience. He's not very good, but he's got experience.
Yeah. I'm going to take Notre Dame in this one. Under a touchdown. I mean, there's so much gone from Corvallis. I think Notre Dame feels good about their future. That, yeah, like Sam Hartman's not going to be there. You know, they weren't that great on offense, especially. But I feel like they're kind of rallying around Marcus Freeman. They have a lot more continuity than Oregon State has. I just feel like it's one of those things where this could be just a house of cards where it's like all these dudes have left, a bunch of coaches have left, and you got to try to like put something together. Could there be wagons being circled and everyone just, you know, fighting for Trent Bray and all that stuff? Sure, that could happen. It's a bowl game. Like anything's weird, but I feel like there's just been that those meeting rooms and that practice field has to look so different than what it did just, you know, a month ago. So I feel like that can have an impact. So I'm going to take Notre Dame in this one and lay the 6.5.
All right. So this will be the moment then where you take, you pull even with me.
If I pull even or you take the if it's a pull even moment, cool. Then we pick the bowl game, you know, the Washington game, the Oregon game. And if it's a two, you know, you go ahead by two, then I just have to pick opposite.
No, you don't understand. I'm not going to pick a bowl game correctly this cycle.
should I switch my other two then? I probably should.
I mean,
switch
probably, because you could take a commanding lead going into the final two. No, I know the way this is going. I know exactly the way this is going. I'm applying logic to things, and it won't work. It will be bad logic, and we're going to. I'm going to go 0-4 on bowl season. 0-4.
Wow.
Washington fans just have to hope that I don't pick them at all to cover anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess that's it. Should we take a
Streamyard
break?
Let's take a break. Back in a minute.
Okay. You do that way too long.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, It's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Yeah, but I think mine sounds better.
Okay.
I think yours is too abbreviated.
Gotcha.
But it does hurt my throat. It's that last little bit.
Nice.
Probably a little tickle now. I think I made myself sick doing that.
Okay, we got some emails.
Do we?
Yeah. I think the last one is Heinrich in Helsinki. I don't think we... What day did we record?
Heinrich in Helsinki?
What day did we record?
Dude, I don't know. Why are you asking me questions?
Where's
Heinrich in Helsinki? I don't see that.
It's Frank.
Oh, got it.
He says, we can stop talking about Jim Leonard.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
Jim Leonard did not take the head coaching job at Michigan State, and he did not take the defensive coordinator job at Penn State. This means he is holding out for an NFL defensive coordinator job. I say it's with the Green Bay Packers. What do you guys think?
Wow, Heinrich in Helsinki actually asked a question in an email. Huh.
What we think. Yeah. Well, I know the defensive coordinator from the Packers. It's Joe Barry, who was like linebacker coach at USC. I haven't talked to him in years, but I liked him when he was there. I didn't think he was on a hot seat or anything.
Right.
Maybe he is. I don't know. I'm not following the NFL that much, but yeah, maybe he just wants to be an NFL defensive coordinator. I'm not sure.
Don't know. I don't care.
I don't think he was up for the, I mean, I don't think he was like a Michigan State finalist or anything.
Don't know. Don't care.
Okay.
NFL. This isn't an NFL podcast.
Got three NFL games today.
We're also blessedly not yet a Big Ten podcast, so I really don't care about a Penn State defensive coordinator or whatever.
Okay. Is that where we're going? We're going to end up being, like, so this year we're going to do West Coast football. Are we just going to end up being a Big Ten podcast?
No. I just watched a Big Ten game. Utah Northwestern was not appetizing. All right. This is from John and Brea.
Okay.
Remember.
One of our favorites.
Dear Ryan and Dave, thank you for working on Christmas Day. Your dedication to the Pac-12 and the podcast of champions is inspiring. You're like hospital workers, first responders, and the security guard at the villages, showing up on Christmas Day because somebody must watch over things. Despite the demise of the Pac-12, things are looking up in 2024. My Arizona Wildcats secured the 49th best recruiting class in the country and the 6th best in the Big 12. The Alamo Bowl will serve as a debutante ball of sorts, announcing the arrival of the Wildcats into the Big 12 and onto the national stage. No football questions for you, but a history question for Dave.
Oh.
The Battle of the Alamo only lasted 90 minutes. That's roughly half the time the game will take and about the amount of time it takes to rent a car if you walk up to the Alamo counter. It didn't go well for the team from Texas, even after Davy Crockett transferred in from Tennessee. Why is the Alamo such a big tourist attraction? Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Bear down, John and Brea. Great questions about the Alamo. So I'm going to take everyone on a trip down my memory lane.
Okay.
There was a Disney, I don't know if it was a made-for-television film or just a film about Davy Crockett. And I think it was based, I think it was like one of those movies that was like pseudo a TV show, but then they would take parts of the TV show and make it into a movie. But I watched this religiously as a child. I watched Davy Crockett go to the Alamo, and get just murdered, along with every single other person in the Alamo. And I watched this at like 6. Real formative experience. I then dressed up as Davy Crockett for like 2 different Halloweens. Complete with a coonskin cap. To this day, I own, I think, between 2 and 3 coonskin caps. anyway, the Alamo itself. So I don't know if anyone has ever visited the Alamo in San Antonio.
It is
really, really, really unimpressive. It's like in the middle of, I don't know, just like a normal part of the city. And it's super small. Like it's just like, I think you can walk the entire face of it in about 30 seconds. It's small.
It's right across from the hotel that we would stay at for the Army All-American Bowl. You'd be walking to the Riverwalk and you walk by, oh, there's the Alamo. You want to go check that out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I took a bunch of really vulgar photos with my buddies when we went for the Final Four in 2008 of us sitting on the cannons as if, you know, the cannon was like your penis,
like a Michael Penix,
like a phallus.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Alamo, my guess as to why it is so famous is that it was a galvanizing piece of propaganda for the United States to enter the fray, so to speak. And so it was used for that purpose. But if you read about the history of it, I mean, it was basically a response to another massacre where a bunch of Texans had come in and basically done a lot of murdering of Mexican settlers in the area. And so then the Santa Ana's army of like 1500 went up there and showed no mercy to the Alamo soldiers. Not saying it's good, but it was, you know, kind of that classic this for that, tit for tat.
Sure.
But I think it was galvanizing. I think it, and it led to, you know, obviously the Mexican American War and the establishment of many of our national borders today in a blatant and, you know, one might say illegal land grab from the United States, taking all the American Southwest from what was then Mexico.
John and Brea, thanks for letting Dave go on one of those rants again. Appreciate
I'm that. Just saying, I'm just saying, very immoral war. James K. Polk, very bad president, among the worst. All right, moving right along.
Okay.
You want to do Eric and Figueroa?
Sure. Email questions. He goes, here are some email questions, which I kind of assumed it was an email.
Yeah, no, subject line, and then I liked subject line and then first sentence agreement. That's always
so nice. We're all on the same page here with Eric that these will be questions for the Podcast of Champions. Number one, at the end of the most recent podcast / YouTube video, Ryan paused a bit and looked upwards when he mentioned that he was going to meet an ex-coworker for lunch. Was that pause and upward gaze due to a nostalgic reminiscing of his engineering days? Does Ryan miss it? What type of engineering work did Ryan do? Side note, I was an engineer after graduating from UCLA. It was the best job I ever had, but a merger with another company put an end to that. Well, I don't remember my upward gaze. I don't think it was reminiscing for my days as an engineer. I enjoyed my career as an engineer. I probably would have made much more money if I stayed an engineer and didn't do this, but I like having, I like being my own boss. I like having free time, which I have more of this. You know, I can go play volleyball on a Wednesday morning instead of being in an office. I do like that. And I was a ASIC designer, so application specific integrated circuits.
That's not a real thing.
It's a real thing.
No,
I designed a chip that was in a satellite for some military thing at some point. So yeah. So if anything bad happened, it might have been because of me. But yeah, that's what I did.
All I heard is that you designed ASICs. You were a shoe designer.
Say spell the same way.
Yeah, you designed ASICs. So Ryan's engineering background is he made shoes, apparently. And that's how he got into sports. He was a failed ASICs designer and realized they're never going to get traction in the world of Nike and Adidas. And that's when he moved into sports proper.
True. I did have a buddy that was high school. He went to Michigan State for package engineering. So this is very different. So all that stuff.
Package engineering.
Yeah. So like
this basically is making boxes.
I mean, how you wrap things, so I would always like think of him like, God, like if you're trying to open something and it's like sealed three different times. We're like, this is over. Like, this is over engineered. We don't need all this packaging.
So it is funny that you like, we have these commonplace everyday things like packages, like boxes, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, you just think, oh, these things just come to be, like they just are created. But no, there's like a team of extremely smart people who are like building these stupid things and like designing these things. And it's like, how did you make something that requires this much tape? What happened? What was the failure here?
And then like, even like if you get the Amazon boxes or the bags, like the bags are designed to like, you can open them, but then also use them. And I don't even know. I probably rip them open so you can't reuse them.
Yeah, you throw them away. I just like dig my fingers in and just tear it open. Like it's the scene in Alien where the chest burster comes out.
Yeah, I like that. And then even the boxes, like they're less and less material being used, all that kind of stuff. So there's engineering that goes into that. I think he was on like the, I think he worked for Hunt's for a while. So like jars and cans and things. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how we got.
So he's the problem. Like he's why you have to like tap the label or whatever on a jar of ketchup.
He could have been part of the problem. Yeah, I was thinking about him. Like Jeff, what the hell? Okay. He was my setter in high school for a volleyball team too. Okay, number two. Which of the past year's Pac-12 coaches do you think regularly plays board games? Mm. Who'd be a board game player?
Troy Taylor.
Troy Taylor, I would put him up there. He's like Trivial Pursuit kind of stuff.
So there's one of these guys plays like hardcore strategy games. Who is it? Kenny Dillingham, obviously. Kenny Dillingham has played Dungeons and Dragons between 20 and 30 times.
I would go with that.
He's definitely like played like what's it called? Paradox Hill, Avalon Hill, board games.
I don't know that one.
Like that's like you know, the grand battles of the Civil War or something. Like he's definitely broken that out. Kenny Dillingham is a hardcore board gamer.
Okay.
Prove me wrong.
So I think he has so much energy. I don't know if he could sit there and play like
the energy of a guy who drinks like 10 to 15 Mountain Dews while he's playing a board game. Like that's his energy.
All right. I like that. Who else would, I don't think Wilcox would be, maybe Dickert. Could you see Dickert doing?
No. Dickert's just kind of a football guy. None of the other ones strike me. Dillingham's got the energy of a guy who like wants to compete on the grand battlefield of a board game.
I'll roll with you on that one. Number three.
Hey, you'll roll with me on that one.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Dice. You like that?
I see.
Yeah.
Three. What are some podcasts, non-sports related, that you guys listen to?
Hmm.
I don't do much anymore. I used to listen to like the Adam Carolla one because I liked him when he was on K-Rock and stuff. I thought he was funny. And then I listened to some Freakonomics ones, which were kind of fun, but then they just became so overproduced. And I was like, sometimes you just want to hear who that guest is saying and they just cut everything down. And it's like, I know they talked a lot longer than that. You just cut it down to your 45-minute thing. But those are a couple that I'd listen to. How about you?
I don't do a whole lot. I'll pick and choose like certain like interview shows if I think the guest is interesting. Like, I was always a big Conan O'Brien guy when he was doing the what was the one before the Tonight Show, Late Show, whatever it was on NBC. I used to watch that as a kid. So I'll listen to his interview show if the like guest is interesting because he's pretty good. He's pretty funny.
Triumph, the Insult Comic Doc. Oh my god!
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I could listen to him just kind of babble about whatever. But no, I just don't like because I'll try to listen to occasional sports shows just to kind of, you know, keep in the swing of things and what's like being discussed. So I'll listen to like I listen to like Bomani Jones's podcast because he's just, I really just love listening to that guy just think things through. And then the Shutdown Fullcast I listen to pretty regularly during the season.
I can't.
You think our show is like a little gonzo sometimes? That one is out there.
It starts off gonzo. Like we at least do like an introduction and stuff. They just start talking about yeah. some joke that they made 3 years ago. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it requires like, you got to find an episode that's like a gateway point, because if you just get in, it's like, I don't know what the hell's happening. And these people don't introduce themselves, so I don't even know who's talking. But yeah, beyond that, like, it's just hard because I'm like, I do it when I commute, but otherwise I'm not going to listen to anything. And so, like, I want to listen to music if I'm like working out or something or doing anything else. I don't want to like have to focus on something. So it's really just like, I don't know, 10 hours a week where I have time.
Yeah.
To do it.
Four. Why is it that baseball managers wear a baseball uniform during a game they are managing, but no other sports managers or head coaches of the sports teams of other sports teams wear their team's uniform during a game?
Because baseball uniforms are unflattering on everyone in like very specific ways because of how they're, you know, constructed. And it's like traditional for them to do it. Like they've been doing it forever. And I think this goes back probably to like player managers and stuff.
I think player managers is part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, would it have been really funny to see Phil Jackson in his Lakers heyday wearing like a, you know, number 45 or something Lakers jersey while sitting on the
and like short shorts
on the bench? Yes. So no, it would have been even better in baggy shorts.
Like, his that would be baggy shorts era. But like, you know, who was the Detroit Pistons manager? Like, I forget his name, but he won a couple. Like when I think they had like the short shorts, like the Isaiah Thomas years.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm blanking on his name, but yeah, you know, seeing him,
yeah,
in those kind of shorts, like,
yeah. And then football coaches wearing like
a helmet. Wear a helmet.
Well, like, what would they do? Would they just wear like
they wear jerseys? A headset already?
Yeah, but would they just wear like jerseys and pants, or would they wear pads? Like, would you wear the whole thing?
You
or
gotta
would
wear just pads. Be wearing... Come on.
Well, know? It's not like the. I mean, are baseball coaches or baseball managers wearing like a cup? I don't know. That'd be kind of a weird thing to be doing.
They should put like baseball managers should put like the elbow guards on, the big glove like when you're sliding in, and like the helmet that has one side protected. Like, that'd be good.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. His last one: seeing how USC and UCLA have so many national championships combined, what are the chances that next year the Big Ten starts promoting themselves as the Conference of Champions? Thanks, guys.
I'm pretty sure that's trademarked.
Probably trademarked, but they will, if you take all the championships over, they will have more team national championships than any conference. Because USC and UCLA, I think, second and third behind Stanford. So I think Cal has a bunch. Stanford has a bunch, but it was the big three, USC, UCLA, and Stanford, have the three most in all of NCAA. So having them all in one conference, now you put two of them in the Big Ten. I believe the Big Ten has the most now, or will.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about something up at the top of the show. The Washington story about I think it was in the Seattle Times, maybe, about the like final days of the Pac-12 before Washington decided to go. Did you see this?
I did not see that. No. So
okay, so it's they did like a public records request for like a bunch of text messages and emails from the Washington president, Anna Maria Koss. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Kasse? Whatever. And then the Oregon president, and then also Kirk Schultz is in there a lot, and George Kliavkov. And it's very, very obvious that, like...
Is it all presidents, or were the ADs involved,
it was,
too?
It was... Well, there was a little bit between the Washington president and Jen Cohen, too.
Okay.
But it was, like, breaking down just how the final days worked. And suddenly, like, a lot of the reporting at the time makes a lot more sense. Because, remember, there was all that reporting that, like, oh, it's going to work out. And then it suddenly didn't. Apparently, that was a lot of the Washington president basically talking out of both sides of her mouth to different people. Like, wow. Because she had two roles. She was the head of the president's group, but also she was trying to get her school over to the Big Ten. Yeah. So she would be talking shit to Jen Cohen about the potential Apple deal at the same time she's like telling George Kliavkov that I'm going to help you get it over the finish line, and telling like some of the other presidents, oh yeah, we got to make this work. And so it was just like a little bit skeezy in the way that it almost had to be. And my big takeaway, honestly, the big takeaway from the entire story was that Kirk Schultz comes across as big of a boob and as big as an idiot as I kept calling him on this show for all
so
of
you feel good.
Just yeah, I felt really good because he at one point after Washington makes the move, he texts the Washington president and is like, yeah, I need to figure out how we're going to deal with, you know, 40% cut budgets and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, whether even many of our leadership can keep their jobs. My next job is probably going to be as a pizza delivery guy. Please tip well or something like that.
This is the president of the university.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, dude, and it says earlier in the story that he's very familiar with public records requests and is actually like redacting stuff from previous like messages. And it's like, you're familiar with public records requests and that you, and yet you put that in a message to another president of the university. Anyway, he comes across like a big idiot. And Plyavkov comes across, like, doesn't come across that poorly. I think he thought he had an ally in the UW president. And then he's, okay, cause, like, blase. So, cause, right? Is that where we're going, West Texas, Mike? Whatever. But Plyavkov clearly thought he had an ally in her, and then basically 11th hour betrayal. And that's reading it all. It's like, I mean, this was probably inevitable anyway with the UCLA USC stuff, but it seems like there was a significant lack of transparency in the final days, and maybe that was necessary to get the things done that needed to happen. Or
yeah.
Honestly, it read to me more like cowardice. Like, it read to me more like that kind of thing. And this is – go read that story, everyone, because what it looks to me like is you often think people in positions of power are, like, grand strategists and they've all got a great idea and all that kind of stuff. And they're all, like, leaders, and they really understand how to be leaders, and they're all experts in their field and all that kind of stuff. But, like, what it screamed to me was, like, high school kids who are trying to navigate a social situation and aren't being honest with each other about, like, their different... Like, it just reads, like, the same social dynamics that everyone has experienced since they were 16 years old, just continuing at the highest levels of collegiate leadership. Because you had Cohen and Kase just kind of, like, shit-talking the whole thing, while saying something else to everyone else. And it just feels like you didn't have the strength of conviction to just tell Plyavkov, hey, that $23 million deal, not going to work. Not going to work. So if you want any chance for this to work, you got to really quickly come up with something else because it's not going to work. Yeah. But instead, they were lying, essentially, to his face, which sucks, but also Plyavkov should have known better that wasn't going to work. But it does feel like a little bit of just shitty behavior.
And, I mean, at that point, you have to realize that it's all every man for themselves, right? So every president's going to say what's best for their school. And I'm sure I want to go back and read the article. I'll check it out. But I think, you know, just the ability of Fox to come in and offer like a half share to Oregon and Washington to allow it, like, that needed to happen too. Like, I think there might have been like, hey, we're going to do this. Unless Fox steps up and pays us, then we're going to leave. You know, did that come up at all?
It didn't really come across in the story. What came across in the story was that they knew much earlier in the week than the day of that they were not going to agree to this deal and they were going to try to go somewhere else. It certainly read to me like that could have been conveyed quicker and earlier to Plyavkov and the other members, just to, because maybe Plyavkov could have done some additional, like, hey, this is all going to fall apart unless you can do X. But it feels like a lack of transparency. Maybe Kase and Washington wanted to go anyway. And so it was going to, they didn't necessarily want to communicate that transparently to Plyavkov because they thought it was done anyway. But all of this, it just seems like, shitty behavior from many different people. But like shitty behavior in a very common way that everyone experiences in kind of, you've experienced it in your work life at like some shitty mid-level management position. You've experienced it in high school. You've experienced it in college where people just don't communicate like their true intentions sometimes. And it's just, you know, that continuing at a very, very high level. A lot of times it's not grand strategy. It's just people's like baser qualities. Just they still exist when you're 50 and in a high level of leadership.
I would think it'd be interesting to see when the offer from the Big Ten and Fox materialized. Like, if you're talking out both sides of your mouth, because it sounded like they wanted to leave, but they might not have a landing spot. Like, it might not have worked. So then their best option would be sticking with the Pac-12 and trying to figure something out.
Yeah.
But if there's any way to get out, if there's some sort of escape pod anywhere, then you're keeping those options open. But it kind of sounds like that's sort of where they were, but that's it's really interesting. I'll go check it out for sure.
Yeah, go read it.
Christmas reading.
Yeah, this is from Rob in Seattle. It's our last question.
Okay.
Boys in the boat and the Pac-12's fate. Merry Christmas, Dave, Ryan, and all you Pac-12 fans. Before I get too deep into this email, there are spoilers about the Boys in the Boat movie coming in hot. If you're planning on seeing the movie and don't know the full story, you might want to fast forward a couple of minutes right now.
What if you're hosting the show?
Yeah.
And I can't fast forward.
We can't. Okay. We can't get off this train. Now then, the presents are wrapped. My nearly 2-year-old daughter helped me stir the cookie batter before she went to bed, and the Chateaubriand beef roast is salted and undergoing osmosis in the fridge before I serve it for Christmas dinner. It's merry times in Seattle. Speaking of which, Husky fans sure have a lot to be grateful for this Christmas. In addition to our dogs being in the CFP, the Boys in the Boat film is now in theaters. For those unaware, the quick background is that the Washington men's crew team is the premier American rowing team and has been so for nearly a century. With 19 national titles, the UW rowing team is the pride of Washington. The Boys in the Boat film, directed by George Clooney, is based on the book of the same name, which itself is based on the true story of the UW men's crew team that beat the Nazis with Hitler in attendance in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. The team consists largely of underdogs who grew up in logging towns and mining camps during the Depression before going on to beat Cal, their main rival, the old East Coast Ivy League schools, and eventually win gold in Berlin. Frankly, the whole story plays out so well that it would be a bit hard to believe if it weren't all true. It's inspiring as hell. I saw the film at an early showing a few days ago. There's a moment in the story when the Huskies win at Poughkeepsie, a race that is supposed to decide which collegiate team will represent the nation in the Olympics. That part is Hollywood. They blend two separate races into one for the movie. However, the Olympic Committee, represented by the Penn AD, informs the Husky head coach that there's no money to send the team to Berlin and that they'll need to raise $5,000 in a short period of time, or the second-place Penn boat that could afford to travel would go in their place. The Husky coach is livid and claims that the committee wasn't expecting Washington to win and were actively trying to exclude them from a chance at competing in the Olympics. Against the odds and during the middle of the Depression, the UW team scraps together nearly enough money via donations from back home, but falls $300 short of their goal. In real life, the Seattle Chamber of Commerce paid the $5,000. At the final hour, there's a knock at the door, and the Cal coach steps in. He personally cuts a check for the remaining $300 to help send the Washington boat to Berlin. I legitimately teared up in the theater. That part is not fiction. Cal's coach really donated $300 to the Huskies. The whole scene made me so sad that our beautiful conference is going away. We have so much history together, and yet it all means so little to the people and schools back east. It was a reminder that West Coast schools have always had to do more and do better just to get noticed by the powers that be. I'm going to miss our silly yet incredible conference so damn much. We did not deserve this fate. Beat Texas and go Dogs. Also, go see the Boys in the Boat, or maybe just read the book because it's even better, Rob in Seattle.
Nice. Thanks, Rob. That's cool. I didn't know the story or anything.
Neither did I. That's awesome. Yeah, what a nice little email, because that, I think, kind of, you know, captures some of the feeling about this end of the Pac-12. The last year where we're going to see Pac-12 football is this year, 2023. Very sad. Sucks.
Well, we will see a Pac-12 game in 2024, or two of them.
Will they be playing each other?
No.
No, then we won't. If you infect a Pac-12 team with another team from another league, all you're doing is seeing the next several years of college football.
Yeah.
You want to see Pac-12 versus Pac-12 in perpetuity, onward and upward, forever.
That's what I would like.
But we don't get that.
Alas, that's not where we are.
No.
All right, David.
Well, where are we?
I think it's time for go off and do your Christmas things.
You think it's time to be done with this? You think an hour and 15 minutes on Christmas morning is enough for the people?
I think it is.
You've stretched into Christmas afternoon where you are.
I am afternoon. Games are starting.
The Jell-O is jiggling on this show.
I got cookies to eat.
How many cookies? What kind of cookies are we talking about?
Oh my God, so many. So my sister makes, my mom's great at making Christmas cookies. And
can we talk about Christmas cookies? Like,
yeah,
the frosted ones? Those are trash, right?
Okay. Sugar cookies are good. I like sugar cookies. We didn't do them this year. We're going to. My mom makes, so one of my favorites is M&M cookies. It's basically like a chocolate chip cookie, but you have cut up pieces of M&Ms in the cookie instead, and then M&Ms on top. It's very good. My birthday was a few days ago. My mom or my sister made me a big chocolate cake. I had leftover icing. I put some icing between some of the cookies. That was very good. Peanut butter Hershey Kiss cookies. So it's like a peanut butter cookie, and they put a Hershey Kiss on top. Very good. Peanut butter balls. It's basically peanut butter, like a cookie rolled into a ball, dipped in chocolate. That you can cook. Some people call them Buckeyes because they kind of look like a Buckeye. Excellent. She makes some date nut bars that I really love. A lot of good cookies.
Do you ever do the semi-melted hugs and kisses on like tiny pretzels, and you melt them together and then put them in the fridge to freeze or to refrigerate them?
Those are good.
So good. So fucking good.
I'm running out of battery. I'm going to move around here and plug myself in.
You're running out of battery?
Yeah. I didn't plug in.
Wow. That's why you wanted to be done with the show.
Oh. This isn't going to work. Okay.
We don't need to. We don't need to. We can go.
We can?
Yeah, we can. I wasn't going to keep you on here.
All right.
West Texas Mike does ask, unless David wants to do a playlist of his exchange with Bruin Girl, which was an exchange I had on the Twitter with a pure fan of mine and Bruin Report Online's. No, I won't be doing that. I will not be adding more attention to that person. Great. Here we are at the end.
Yeah.
We've reached the end. It's Christmas Day. Hope everyone has a merry little Christmas, and a happy new year. We will be back just before
the new year. Yeah.
But I still hope for it even now.
Yes.
Cause I don't know how the prime meridian, the international dateline works. Maybe it'll already be the new year somewhere. Who knows? It's impossible to know. Don't tell me how to know. I don't want to know. It's impossible to know. Yeah.
So I think we're going to wrap it up then.
We will. We'll wrap it up.
For, David Woods. I'm over on this side now. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy holidays to everybody. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.